Blog Talk Radio.
When he told you you're not good enough, when he told you you're not right, when he told you you're not strong enough to put up a good fight, when he told you you're not worthy, when he told you you're not loved, when he told you you're not beautiful, you'll never be enough.
Well, hello, everyone, and welcome to your place. We're still following this one-year Bible study that is like none we've ever heard before. Why? Because this teacher is teaching in a school format and not as a church lesson plan. The teacher believes that the Bible is based in geography and history. He speaks of many things on personal knowledge when he's speaking to the geography of the Bible because he's really been there. This is so enlightening to the study of the Bible and getting a visual picture of what's going on. He also teaches that the Bible is the inspired Word of God, which makes his teaching unlike other school teachers we've found that have their own opinions and own agenda. We've started with creation and moved down to the promise of God to Abraham, and we've learned with a new respect of what it means for God to be faithful even when his creation is not. For sure, Abraham made wrong choices, but God still gave to Abraham the promise of being the father of a blessed people that could not be numbered. Here we take a look at the continuation of the promise through his son Isaac. As always, we open up the mics at the end of each show so you can make a comment or ask a question. And now let's have a listen.
So welcome back, everyone. We're going in now at the end of Genesis 22. We found that Abraham and Isaac are now back home in Beersheba, and in chapter 23, Sarah lived to be 127 years old, and then she died. This is a big event in Isaac's life. Isaac was her only son. Isaac was the son born to her at 90 years old, a quite miraculous birth. Isaac, well, he was the apple of his mother's eye, and she of his. And Isaac misses her. He's 37 years old when she dies. He's still not married. And I think we need to get a wife for Isaac. So over in chapter 24, that's exactly what we're going to do. Chapter 24, verse 1. Abraham was now old and well advanced in years, and the Lord had blessed him in every possible way. And he said to the chief servant in his household, the one in charge of all that he had, "Put your hand under my thigh. I want you to swear by the Lord, the God of heaven and the God of earth, that you will not get a wife for my son from the daughters of these Canaanites here. I don't want my son marrying a Canaanite, one of the local girls. I want him marrying someone from my own tribe and clan. So I would like you to go back to Haran." Remember, Abraham had moved from Ur of the Chaldeans down in southern Iraq of today, up north to Haran, which is in eastern Turkey of today, and then from Haran down to the land of Canaan, or what we think of as Israel. His extended family is up in Haran. "So I would like you to go to Haran and find a wife for my son Isaac from my own people." And notice he made the servant swear an oath by putting his hand under Abraham's thigh. Well, that's NIV euphemism. If you are going to take an oath, and it's going to be a very serious oath, and you are going to take an oath, and it's going to be a promise to the great patriarch Abraham, what is the most significant thing you can do to really bind that oath? Well, you don't put your hand on Abraham's thigh. You swear an oath on the family jewels. And that's exactly what the servant does. Exactly. Now, you don't want to break that oath, let me tell you. So, the servant sets off, and we read in verse 10 that he took 10 of his master's camels with him, and he made the journey all the way up to Haran. And when he got there, he came into town, and there was a well in the town. Now, there's going to be a well, or needs to be a well, in every village, town, and city. A prerequisite for a village, town, or city is a fresh water source. So typically, a well is dug and the village sprouts up around the well. So you'll find in all the cities that we encounter in the Bible, wells in the cities, and a number of stories take place by those wells. This story will take place at the well. Jacob is going to meet Rachel at a well. Jesus meets the woman at the well. There's a lot of meeting going on at the well. Because as we read in the end of verse 11, it was toward the evening, the time the women go out to draw water. In normal daily life in a town or a village, at the end of the day, after dinner, the women would go to the well with the children, and they would draw the water they need for the next day, so that when the family wakes up in the morning and breakfast is going to be readied and people are going to wash up, all the water is there. So you would go to the well, and you could either lower a bucket by turning a crank and letting it down on a rope, or simply having a pulley and dropping the bucket and pulling it up. But you would lift a bucket of water, and a bucket of water is pretty heavy. So one bucket of water would come up, you would pour it into your water jar, get another bucket, pour it into the water jar, and so on, and prepare for the next day. It was also a big time of socializing for the village women. All the children would come, and they would play, and the women would get the water, and they would talk, and they would gossip, and they would tell about this and that and the other thing, and it was all the socializing that went on. Remember the woman at the well with Jesus? He met her early in the morning, and she was the only one there. Why? Because she wasn't welcomed there by the other women at night. She had to go alone early in the morning so as not to encounter any of those other women. She was a pariah, an outcast. Well, the servant goes to Haran, and he comes to the well in town. And he thought along the way, well, how will I know the right girl for Isaac? Someone from Abraham's clan and extended family, how will I know? And it occurred to him, you know, when I get there, if there's a girl who is very gracious, very hospitable, very helpful, someone who looks like maybe a good match for Isaac, I'll be able to tell by the way she behaves toward me, a total stranger. So he shows up, and here's Rebecca at the well, and she's getting water for home. And the servant, verse 17, hurried to meet her and said, please give me a little water from your jar. And she said, well, drink, my lord, of course. And she lowered the jar to her hands and gave him a drink. Well, that was quite nice. And after she had given him a drink, she said, oh, and I'll draw water for your camels, too, until they've finished drinking. Well, that's very nice. How many camels are there? 10, we saw. 10 camels. Now, you know camels can travel a long time without water. And we have traveled all the way from Beersheba in the Negev up to Haran, and we have 10 camels that are probably quite thirsty at this point. How much water does a camel drink? Well, I actually looked that up, and I found that a camel on empty, will drink up to 25 gallons of water. 25 gallons of water. And they do it in about 15 minutes. 25 gallons. 10 camels, 250 gallons of water she's going to haul up from that well. So this is not an idle offer. Let me water your camels. This is a big job that who in their right mind would volunteer to do that? But she does. It shows the extent of her kindness and hospitality toward a total stranger. So we have a pretty good match here for Isaac. Well, verse 22, when the camels had finished drinking, the man took out a gold nose ring weighing a becca, gold bracelets weighing 10 shekels, and he tipped her. He gave her something nice, some jewelry that he had brought along. The 10 camels are loaded down with good things. Gold, silver, spices, gifts for the family of the girl that the servant will find for Isaac. So the servant gave her a ring and a bracelet and so on. And he asked in verse 23, well, whose daughter are you? Who is your family? Please tell me, is there room in your father's house for us to spend the night? Because there are no Hiltons or Marriotts, right? You depend upon local hospitality. So is there room in your father's home for us to spend the night? Clearly, this girl has been very hospitable, very gracious, and would you mind if I stayed at your home? And she answered, I'm the daughter of Bethuel, the son that Milcah bore to Nahor. Well, Nahor is Abraham's brother. And she asked, she said, we have plenty of straw and fodder, and there's plenty of room for the night. So the man bowed down and worshiped the Lord, saying, "Well, praise be the Lord, I found the one." You know, not only is she very kind and gracious, but she is a relative within the clan of Abraham. This is exactly the right girl. And she's quite a looker, too. So, in verse 28, the girl ran and told her mother's household about all these things. Now, Rebekah had a brother named Laban. We'll call him Uncle Laban. That is Rebekah's brother, Abraham's brother-in-law. And he hurried out to the man at the spring. So Rebekah tells him about everything. You know, oh, this man came, he had 10 camels, that's a lot. And he had all this gold and silver on the camels. And I was quite nice to him. And Laban thought, I mean, he could hear the cash register. And he ran out. Now, as soon as he had seen the nose ring, the bracelets on his sister's arm, and heard Rebekah tell what the man said to her, he went out to the man, and he said, "Oh, come, you who are blessed by the Lord, why are you standing here? Come on in, we'll have dinner together." And he begins to schmooze the guy. Now, Laban is quite the character. He is quite the character. We're going to meet a lot more of him as our story goes on. But bear in mind, he is not a guy you would buy a used car from. Okay? So, sure enough, they talk, and it looks like a good match, and Rebekah goes back to Beersheba with the servant to be the wife of Isaac. And we have a lovely scene where they meet at verse chapter 24 at verse 61. Then Rebekah and her maid got ready and mounted their camels and went back with the man. So the servant took Rebekah and left, and they make the journey back. Now Isaac had come from Beer Lehi-Roi, for he was living in the Negev desert in the south of Israel. He went out to the field one evening, and my translation reads, to meditate. Well, up to this point, notice, after chapter 22, the sacrifice of Isaac, after chapter 22, we have heard virtually nothing from Isaac. And when he marries Rebekah, he'll be 40 years old. So 5 years, 3-5 years, have gone by since the sacrifice of Isaac story, at least. And we've heard nothing from him. And you'll notice in our story, when you read the story yourself closely, that Isaac, after chapter 22, will never say a word to Abraham again. There is no conversation between the two. None. He's very pensive. If he had been 33 years old at the sacrifice of Isaac, well, that's 7 years to being 40. But after his mother dies, he's 37. So a few years have gone by, and his relationship with his father is not a good one. It's not a good one. He's lonely. His mother has died. And he went out just to be by himself in the Negev. As he was sitting there, pondering, he looked up. And he saw camels approaching. And at verse 64, Rebekah also looked up and saw Isaac. They're approaching the caravan with Rebekah on a camel. And she sees a man in the distance, maybe 100 yards off, sitting under an acacia tree with his knees drawn up, looking at the ground, perhaps doodling with his finger on the ground, just thinking and pondering. And he looked up and saw the caravan, and just as he looked up, Rebekah looked up and their eyes met, and the music began. You know? Verse 64, Rebekah looked up and saw Isaac. She got down from her camel. She asked the servant, "Who is that handsome man?" "He's my master," the servant answered. "He will be your husband." "Oh my." She took her veil and covered her face, a gesture of humility and modesty. And then the servant told Isaac all he had done. And Isaac brought her into the tent of his mother, Sarah. And he married Rebekah. He had kept Sarah's tent for 3 years, exactly the way it had been when she died. All of her little things on the night table, all of her clothing in the same place, and he would go in and just sit in his mother's tent. He missed her. He was her boy. Imagine having a special child born in your old age, totally unexpected, and he is the only son of the family. They had a very close relationship, and he just hadn't gotten over it yet. He hadn't gotten over her death. But he brought Rebecca into his mother's tent. And you think he might have told Rebecca about his mother? There were the pictures, there were the, you know, in the bedroom. He married her. She became his wife, and he loved her. And Isaac was comforted after his mother's death. Rebecca takes Sarah's place. And now they're married, and Isaac is 40 years old at this point. So, chapter 25, Abraham dies, and now it's just Isaac and Rebecca. The plan of salvation is on the move, Abraham to Isaac. Now Isaac needs to pass it on to the next. And sure enough, that's about to happen in chapter 25 at verse 20. Isaac was 40 years old when he married Rebecca, daughter of Bethuel, the Aramean from Padan Aram, and the sister of Uncle Laban, the Aramean. Now Isaac prayed to the Lord on behalf of his wife because she was barren. Do you see a trend here? Sarah was barren. Rebecca is barren. The Lord answered his prayer, and his wife Rebecca became pregnant. Babies jostled with each other in her, and she said, "Why is this happening?" It was a very difficult pregnancy with twins, and the twins are just struggling with each other in the womb. The Lord answered, "Two nations are in your womb, and two people from within you will be separated. One people will be stronger than the other, and the older will serve the younger." The conflict that is in your womb will continue to balloon into a conflict between two nations. Now, when the time came for her to give birth, there were twin boys in her womb. The first to come out was red. I'll bet when he came out, he was screaming at the top of his lungs, and his face was crimson, and he had veins standing out on his head. And he was hairy all over like a little monkey. So they named him Harry. Esau means hairy. Now, after this, his brother came out with his hand holding Esau's heel, trying to pull him in so he got out first. He was named Jacob. Jacob means the deceiver, the one who's trying to get out, for deceive his brother, pull him back in and get out first. So we have Harry and the deceiver. Isaac was 60 years old when Rebecca gave birth to them. So he was 40 when he married Rebecca. 20 years have passed, just the two of them. And now she gives birth to twins. And the twins are at each other's throat from the very start. The boys grew up, and Esau became a skillful hunter, a man of the open country, while Jacob, was a quiet man, staying among the tents. The women stay among the tents. The men go out in the field, they take care of the flocks, they do the hunting. The women do the work in the camp. So Esau was a man of the open country. He was a hunter, he was an athlete, while he was a star quarterback on the high school football team. He was the one everyone looked up to, and he was a handsome fellow, and he was strong, and he was big, and he was muscular, and he had red hair, and a big red beard, like a Viking, you know? But Isaac, he was a quiet fellow, staying among the tents. Isaac, who had a taste for wild game, loved old Esau, the hunter. But Rebecca loved Jacob. Now, when you have a family where the father loves one of the children more than the other, and the mother loves the other child more than the one the father loves, you're set for disaster. Right? And didn't that happen in Abraham's family? Abraham had two sons, Ishmael and Isaac. Abraham loved Ishmael. Sarah hated him. Sarah loved Isaac. Well, Abraham loved Isaac too, but we have that dysfunction going on in the family of Abraham and Sarah, which passes right on to the next generation, where we have Isaac loving Esau the most, Rebekah loving Jacob the most. The dysfunction just moves right on. And notice, we don't have any, we haven't met any perfect people here. These are real people in real times with real problems, just like all of us, and God is still working the plan of salvation through them in spite of those complications and problems. Well, once Jacob, in verse 29, was cooking some stew, Jacob is with the women in the tent cooking. This is not a very masculine-seeming fellow here. He was in the tent cooking and making stew, and Esau came in from the country. He had been out hunting, and he was famished. He said to Jacob, "Hey, let me have some of that stew. I'm famished." And Jacob replied, in a kind of snide remark, "Well, sell me your birthright." Why would someone say that? What is the birthright? Well, the birthright would be both sons would share in the inheritance of their father. Both sons would carry on the name of their father. But the birthright refers to the covenant that God made with Abraham. Abraham to Isaac, Isaac to his firstborn son, who is Esau. Remember the stories that Dad used to tell us about his father, about Grandpa Abraham, and God making a covenant with him, and that covenant would run right through, and let me be the one. Well, Esau said, "Look at this. I'm about to die. What good is this stupid birthright to me? It's all nonsense to him. You know, fine, you can be the guy. I don't care. It's all just a bunch of old stories anyhow." So, they cut the deal. And we read at the end of the chapter, so Esau despised his birthright. He despised this whole plan of salvation, this whole God thing, this whole promise that was made. He didn't believe any of it. He's a hunter, athlete, strong guy. He doesn't need any of this silly stuff. Well, time goes on. We find Isaac in chapter 26. The only thing Isaac ever does is dig wells. He travels all around the country digging wells. That happens in chapter 26. Digging wells is sort of like urban planning, right? Every village and town needs a fresh water source. You locate a fresh water source, you dig a well, you have planted a city, or a village, town, or city, ultimately. So he's going about digging wells in chapter 26. Now, chapter 27. When Isaac was old and his eyes were so weak he couldn't see any longer, Isaac is now very old and he's blind, he called for Esau, his older son, and said to him, "My son, here I am." I should make a note here. When Isaac was old and his eyes were so weak he couldn't see, he called for Esau. The rabbis tell a story that in chapter 22, when Abraham was going to sacrifice Isaac, and he stood over him and he took a knife to open the arteries on either side of his neck, and he leaned over, that tears were streaming down Abraham's face, and the tears fell into Isaac's eyes and blinded him and created an eye problem for him that got progressively worse until at the end of his life he was blind. The rabbis tell us it was Abraham's tears that blinded Isaac. And again, we see after chapter 22, there was no communication between the two of them ever again. Ever again. Well, I just make that note. It's a tender commentary on that scene. Isaac said to Esau, "I'm an old man now and I don't know the day of my death. That is, it's just around the corner. Would you please get your weapons, your quiver and bow, and go out to the country and I'd love to have some of that antelope that you get. It's so good. And then if you do that, I'll give you my blessing before I die. giving a blessing, a father giving a blessing to a child in this culture of the Bible and in the Middle Eastern culture today and also in other cultures, not ours, but in many others, is a very serious thing. When we were in Istanbul for Ferit Kayrak, our colleague in Istanbul's wedding, and I told, many of you were here at the time, and I told you about the wedding. It was Ferit is Muslim, and he's a very close friend and associate of Logos, and he was 37 years old and was getting married. And we had been looking for this marriage for a long time. I had been through at least five potential marriages with Ferit, you know, and but this was it. This was the big one. And we went to the wedding, and the wedding, in, much like in most parts of Europe, you have a religious service and a civil service. The civil service is a binding legal document, but you can choose to have a religious service too, and they did. The religious service took place at his parents' home, and it was very private. His mother and father were there. His mother and father, her mother and father, his aunt, and me. And it was quite nice. And after the religious service was over, when the imam completed the ceremony, Ferit's father came over and placed his hands on both of them, and he pronounced a blessing on them, a father's blessing on his son and daughter-in-law. Now, I don't know what he said. It was all in Turkish, and I don't speak Turkish. But when his father pronounced the blessing, I was watching, and both Ferit and his bride, Nuray, had tears welling up in their eyes and streaming down their face. And I looked at Ferit's mother, and she was just weeping. It was a very important moment, a very significant moment. A father, the patriarch of the family, blessing the child is a big deal in this culture. And that's what Abraham, that's what Isaac is going to do here for Esau. He's going to bless him before he dies. Now, Rebecca was listening. And when she heard what Isaac had said, oh, she's in trouble. She said to Jacob, verse 8, I overheard your father say to your brother Esau, bring me some game and prepare tasty food to eat so that I may give you my blessing in the presence of the Lord before I die. Now, my son, listen carefully. Do what I tell you. We both know that your father loves Esau more than you. He is going to bless him, and he is going to give him the primary position in this family. Never mind trading the birthright. That's a separate issue. But he will be numero uno in this family after Isaac dies. Now go out to the flock, bring me two young goats so I can prepare tasty food for your father just the way he likes it. Then take it to your father to eat so that he may give you the blessing before he dies. Because the man is blind, he won't know who it is who brings it to him. Jacob said to Rebekah, his mother, this is foolish. My brother Esau's a hairy man. I mean, he looks like an ape. He's got hair all over him, while I am smooth in every way. What if my father touches me? Why, I'd appear to be tricking him, and I'd bring down a curse on myself. His mother said, never mind. Let the curse fall on me. You do what I tell you. Yes, ma'am. And he went out and did it. He went to his father in verse 18. Oh, look at verse 16. She covered his hands, Jacob's hands, and smooth part of his neck with the goat skins. Then she handed to her son Jacob the food to take to Isaac. So Jacob walks in carrying the cooked goat, and he has goat skin from the goats wrapped around his neck and his arms and hands. Looks like a wolf man, you know? And he went into his father. And he has to trick his father into thinking he's Esau. Esau is the big, you know, Eric the Red, Viking, big guy, strong. Isaac is smooth and in the tent, you know. So Jacob is smooth and in the tent. So Jacob went to his father and he said, my father, in an Esau voice, Yes, my son, who is it? Because the voice is not quite right. Who is it? Jacob said,
I am Esau, your firstborn. I have done as you told me. Please sit up and eat some of my game so that you may give me your blessing.
Isaac thought, no, something fishy here. How did you get it so quickly, my son?
The Lord gave me success.
Isaac said, come over here so I can touch you. Jacob went close to his father, who touched him, felt the hair, and he said, the voice is the voice of Jacob, pretending to be Esau. But the hands are the hands of Esau. Now think of Esau, whose hands were like a goat. He didn't recognize him, for his hands were hairy like those of his brother Esau. So he blessed him. He said, you're really Esau?
I am, he replied.
He said, my son, bring me some of the game that I may give you my blessing. So that's exactly what happens. Isaac blesses Jacob. He gives him the primary blessing, positioning him as the number one son in the family. Well, Esau came back from the field. And he said to his father, I prepared the antelope that you like. What? Who are you? Well, I'm Esau. Well, who did I just bless then? It was that little deceiver, Jacob. And Esau said, oh, father, what am I going to do? Because a blessing is a really serious thing. You can't just take it back. Oh, over in verse 41, Esau held a grudge against Jacob because of the blessing his father had given him. He said, that little weasel, not only did he trick me into giving him my birthright, that is, being positioned in the line of salvation, but he stole the primary position in our family from me by deceiving our father, lying to our father, and doing all this behind my back. I'll tell you, I love my father, Isaac, and I would never do anything to hurt him. But he's an old man, and when my father, Isaac, dies, Jacob is a dead man. You don't want Esau on your enemy list. You do not want him as an enemy. And Jacob now has Esau as an enemy. Esau is going to kill Jacob. Well, when Rebekah was told what Esau had done and what he had said, she knows this is not a threat. This is a statement of fact. I've got to get Jacob out of here. Now, how can I move Jacob out of the house, off where he'll be protected from Esau? Let's see. Oh, I know. Esau had married a Hittite woman, a local girl. And remember, Abraham was very concerned that Isaac not marry a Hittite. Well, Esau had. So, at verse 46 of chapter 28, Rebekah said to Isaac, just in an offhand conversation, you know, I am disgusted with living because of these Hittite women. You know, they're marrying into the family. They're everywhere here in town. I hate these Hittite women. Why, if Jacob takes a wife from among the women of this land, my life won't be worth living. Oh, God help me if Jacob married one of these disgusting Hittite girls. So Isaac thought about that, and suddenly it becomes his idea. Isaac said to Jacob, do not marry a Canaanite woman. In fact, I remember when I was a young fellow in the same position you are, at about 37 years old, and my father sent his servant to Padan Aram, up near Haran, to Uncle Laban. And that's where your mother came from. And I am going to do the same thing with you. I would like you to go to Haran, and you look up Uncle Laban, and you find a wife from among our family. Sarah is thinking, boy, was she sly. Isaac thinks it's his idea now. And Jacob leaves. Well, verse 10 of chapter 28, Jacob left Beersheba and set out for Haran. And when he reached a certain place along the way, Bethel, which from Beersheba, he goes straight up the central mountain range, and Bethel is a little bit north of where Jerusalem is today. So it's in the central mountain range, about halfway up toward Galilee. He stopped for the night, and taking one of the stones there, he put it under his head and lay down to sleep, and he had a dream. Well, if you put a rock under your head and went to sleep, you'd have a dream too. And he had a dream in which he saw a stairway, or the more traditional reading, a ladder, resting on the earth with its top reaching to heaven, and the angels of God ascending and descending on this ladder. And there above it stood the Lord, and he said, I am the Lord, the God of your father Abraham and the God of Isaac. I will give you and your descendants the land on which you are lying. Your descendants will be like the dust of the earth. You will be spread out to the east, the west, the north, the south. All people on earth will be blessed through you and your offspring. That is, the birthright that he stole from Esau, God will honor. God is going to work the plan of salvation through Jacob. Why in the world would he do that? Jacob is a liar, a deceiver. He betrays his own brother. Jacob has no positive qualities here. Why would God say, all right, I'll work the plan of salvation through him? Well, he reaffirms the covenant with Jacob. And how does Jacob respond at verse 20? Jacob made a vow, saying, well, all right, if God will be with me, and if God will watch over me on this journey that I'm taking, and if God will give me food to eat and clothes to wear, and if God will allow me to safely return to my father's house, then I will allow him to be my God. Isn't this just like Jacob? Oh, if God will do this, 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 and this for me, then I'll permit him to be my God. And what's more, I'll give him a tenth of everything I get as kind of a bonus. God should be honored being my God. Jacob is a rascal, let me tell you. Well, Jacob arrives in Haran at Padan Aram, and who does he meet? As he approaches the well, he meets Rachel. Rachel, the daughter of Uncle Laban. Why, the story's coming together just right. Just as Abraham's servant met Rebekah at the well, the sister of Laban, now Jacob meets Rachel, the daughter of Laban. Oh, they, same thing. Eyes meet, music plays, and they are head over heels in love. So, verse 13, as soon as Laban heard the news about Jacob, his sister's son, well, the cash register noises went again. He hurried out to meet him, he embraced him, he kissed him, he brought him to his home. There Jacob told him all the things that had happened, and then Laban said to him, you're my own flesh and blood, son. Come on in. Well, after Jacob had stayed with him for a whole month, Laban said to him, they're sitting at the dinner table one night. Been a month. You know, having a house guest for a month. Hospitality is one thing, but a month is something else. And Laban said to him, while eating his roasted goat, you know, just because you're a relative of mine, should you work for me for nothing? And Jacob said, who said anything about work? He's a guest, right? What, work? We hadn't talked about work. Now, Laban had two daughters. The name of the older was Leah, and the name of the younger was Rachel. Now Leah, my NIV reads, had weak eyes. I think that's a lame translation. But Rachel was lovely in form and beauty. That is, Rachel was an absolute drop-dead knockout. Leah, well, she had a nice personality. You know, she didn't cut it anywhere near the level of Rachel. But Jacob was in love with Rachel, and he said, all right, I've been here a month, I'm in love with your younger daughter, Rachel, and I'll work for you 7 years in return for your younger daughter, Rachel, in marriage. Laban's, oh, he's getting ready to negotiate here. He said, well, I don't know. Well, I suppose it's better I give her to you than somebody else. All right, stay here with me. I'm given a lot here, but I'll let you do it. So Jacob served 7 years to get Rachel. Room and board only, 7 years. They seemed like only a few days because he was so in love with her. Why, they would walk hand in hand across the field. They were together all the time. And finally, after the 7 years, Jacob said to Laban, well, I've completed my 7 years. I'd like to have my wife, please. I'd like to lie with her. 7 years, a long time. You know, it's time. So Laban said, all right, we made a deal. 7 years to get my daughter. So Laban brought together all the people. He had a great wedding feast, a big party, lots of food, everybody drank. And the wedding tent was all set up. And they took the young couple to the tent. And she was veiled, like in a burqa, right? She was all veiled. And they went into the tent and they sewed, you know, put the stitching around the tent flaps. And everyone danced around the tent and the music played. Finally, the party dies down and we have the wedding night at the tent. Jacob's dream has come true. He finally has the night with Rachel. But we read, when evening came, Laban had taken his daughter Leah, veiled, heavily veiled, and replaced Rachel with Leah. And in the tent, two went. So Jacob is in the tent unknowingly with Leah. It's now dark inside the stitched-up closed tent, and the night goes on as the wedding night will. When morning came, Jacob woke up. Oh, what a day. Oh, that was terrific. And he undid the stitching on the tent, and he opened it, and the light poured in, and he turned back and looked at the bed. There was Leah. Jacob said to Laban, what have you done to me? I served you for Rachel, didn't I? Why have you deceived me? Talk about the pot calling the kettle black. Now Jacob is deceived by Uncle Laban. When Jacob goes to Jacob is the deceiver, and we saw him trick his brother, his father, everybody he's involved with. He deceives, he lies to, even God. You know, all right, if you'll do all these things for me, then I'll let you be my God. Never mind the plan of salvation and all, but, you know, I'll let you. You should be honored. I'll give you a 10% tip. But now, when Jacob goes to live with Uncle Laban, he goes to graduate school in deception. Uncle Laban has a PhD in deception. And Jacob is going to be on the receiving end of it for a while. Well, Laban said, it's not our custom here to give the younger daughter in marriage before the older one. Finish out this 7-year period. My translation reads bridal week. A week in the Hebrew scriptures, a week is a collection of seven. We think of a week as 7 days, and it is 7 days. But when we follow the Hebrew calendar, as we learn more about it, there are 7 days to a week. 7 years make up a Sabbath year, so you have a week of years, and 7 times 7, 49 years, the next year of 50, is a Jubilee year. So the whole calendar will be built on those sets of seven. So we're working with a week of years, 7 years. And then we'll give the younger one to you also. So, all right. We don't give the older daughter first around here, but I'm willing to compromise. You work another 7 years, and I'll give you Rachel. 14 years of free labor Laban's going to get from Jacob. All right, Jacob did. He loved Rachel. He worked another 7 years. During that time, Leah begins having children with Jacob. At verse 31. The Lord saw that Leah was not loved. He opened her womb. Rachel was barren. Oh, there we go. The theme continues. Sarah was barren. Rebecca is barren. Now Rachel's barren. And, boy, Leah's sure not. She has 4 children in a row. The first one, she said, maybe now my husband will love me, that I've given him a son. Second one, Well, he heard I'm still not loved. Third one, maybe giving him three sons, he'll at least be fond of me. And the fourth one, she simply gave up and stopped having children after that one. It's a really sad story. Leah is not loved. Well, Rachel cannot have children. So Rachel gives her servant girl to Jacob to have children by the servant girl. Where'd she get this idea? How about Grandma Sarah, right? So Rachel's servant girl begins having children. Leah is no longer sleeping with Jacob. She's cut him off entirely. But she gives her servant girl to have children with Jacob. He's having children with two servant girls. But finally, Rachel gets pregnant. Finally. And she gives birth to a son. At verse 23 of chapter 30, she became pregnant and gave birth to a son and said, God has taken away my disgrace. And she named him Joseph. Joseph is son number 11 of the two wives and two concubines. He has worked now for Uncle Laban for nearly 20 years. And Laban has changed his pay, what pay, over and over again. The terms of his employment change over and over. And Jacob has had it. He has absolutely had it. After 20 years, in chapter 31, Jacob sent word to Rachel and Leah at verse 4 to come out to the fields where his flocks were. He said to them, your father's attitude toward me is not what it used to be, but the God of my father has been with me. Now you know that I have worked for your father with all my strength, and yet your father has cheated me by changing my wages 10 times over. However, God has not allowed him to harm me. I did well since I've been here, but I've had it. We are leaving. And that's exactly what happens. Jacob packs up the household in the middle of the night. It's a middle of the night move. He packs up the household, his wives, his children, everything of value, and leaves in the middle of the night. Laban wakes up and finds Jacob and his family gone, and all the household valuables have been taken as well. At verse 22, on the third day, Laban was told that Jacob had fled. Taking his relatives with him, he pursued Jacob for 7 days and caught up with him in the hill country of Gilead. The hill country of Gilead is the central mountain range. He catches up with him. Laban is hot under the collar because Jacob, who has worked for him for 20 years, is now gone. And frankly, Jacob had been running the whole show. And he's finished. He leaves the children, the wives, and they loot, they take the household gods from Laban. They steal from him. Well, you can imagine the encounter. It is not a pretty one. But what can Laban do? He can't keep Jacob as a slave, so he has to give in. Over in chapter 31 at verse 43, Laban answered Jacob, the women are my daughters, the children are my children, the flocks are my flocks. You were an employee. You didn't own any of this. Yet, what can I do today about these daughters of mine who seem to like you? And what can I do about these children they have born? Come now, let us make a covenant, an agreement, you and I, and let it serve as witness between us. So Jacob took a stone and set it up as a pillar. He said to his relatives, gather some stones. So they took some stones and piled them up in a heap, and they ate there at the heap. Laban called it Yegar Shadutha, and Jacob called it Galeed. That is, a heap of stones. Laban said, this heap is a witness between you and me today, and that is why it was called Galeed. It was also called Mizpah, because he said, and here's the deal they make. Now, I'll bet you have heard this used as a blessing at the end of a church service. Have you ever heard a pastor say, may the Lord watch between me and thee while we're absent one from another? Well, it's a pretty common way to close a church service. But here in verse 49, this is what Jacob and Laban agreed upon.
May the Lord keep watch between you and me when we are away from each other. This is not a blessing. It's an agreement between two crooks. May the Lord watch you while I've got my back turned. If you mistreat my daughters or you take any wives besides my daughters, even though no one is with us, I know where you live, says Laban. Well, they part on an unhappy note. Jacob continues traveling south. Now, the troubles are only going to get worse because as Jacob is headed south, Esau, his brother, who settled in Edom and is the founder of the Edomite people, has heard Jacob is on the way home. And in the Middle East, people hold grudges for a long time. Esau learns that Jacob is headed south, and Esau gets 400 armed men and is heading north to meet Jacob. So Jacob's problems are only going to get bigger. In chapter 32, Jacob went on his way, and the angels of God met him. And when Jacob saw them, he said, oh, this must be the camp of God. He's being protected by angels of God. And yet, Esau is on the move. Now, what is Jacob going to do? Well, we read that Jacob brings his entire family south on the king's highway, and he comes to a gorge. And let me read that portion to you. At chapter 32, verse 9, Jacob prayed, O God of my father Abraham, God of my father Isaac, O Lord, who said to me, go back to your country and your relatives, and I will make you prosper. I am unworthy of all the kindness and faithfulness you have shown your servant. I had only my staff when I crossed this Jordan, but now I become two groups. I have two wives, Leah and Rachel, and children by both. Now save me, I pray, from the hand of my brother Esau. Jacob was afraid of Esau. That's why he left 20 years ago to begin with. And now Esau has not forgotten. I'm afraid he'll come and attack me. Oh, and also the mothers with their children. Notice who he's worried about? Me, Jacob. But you have said, I will surely make you prosper and will make your descendants like the sand on the sea, which cannot be counted. And if I get killed by Esau, that won't happen, Lord. He spent the night there. And from what he had with him, he selected a gift for his brother Esau. Send a gift ahead. 200 female goats, 20 male goats, 200 ewes, 30 rams, 30 female camels with their young, 40 cows, 10 bulls, 20 female donkeys, and 10 male donkeys. This is a whole zoo heading as gifts. He put them in the care of his servants, each herd by itself, and said to his servants, go ahead of me and keep some space between the herds. That is, send all these herds ahead of me. Well, it will be a gift to Esau. It will also slow down Esau. Right? He's got to get through all these animals. He instructed the one in the lead, when my brother Esau meets you and asks, to whom do you belong and where are you going and who owns all these animals? Then you are to say, oh, they belong to your servant Jacob. They are a gift sent to my lord Esau, and Jacob is coming behind. Oh, we are trying to butter up Esau for sure. Now, he also instructed the second and the third and all the others who followed herds. You are to say the same thing to Esau when you meet him. One wave after another of gifts. And be sure to tell him, your servant Jacob is coming behind. For he thought, I'll pacify him with these gifts that I'm sending on ahead. Later, when I see him, perhaps he'll receive me and not lop my head off. So Jacob's gifts went on ahead of him, but he himself spent the night in the camp. Now that night, Jacob got up and took his two wives, his two maidservants, and his 11 sons and crossed the ford of the Jabbok River. The Jabbok River flows out of the eastern mountain range from east to west down into the Jordan. The Jabbok River, it's a major runoff stream from the eastern mountain range. Jacob crosses the Jabbok River with all of his people, and then we read, after he had sent them across the stream, he sent over his possessions So Jacob was left alone, and a man wrestled with him till daybreak. Now, I had always thought this is the very first noble thing Jacob has done. He took his wives, his children, and moved them across the Jabbok River, south of the Jabbok River. Then he stayed behind on the northern side. And that's where he wrestles with God. What did Jacob just do? He placed his entire family, all the women and all the children, between himself and Esau. If Esau gets past the wave of gifts, he's going to encounter women and children, and Jacob will know it before Esau gets to him, and Jacob can run away. You see what he's done? I had always seen that until you know the geography, and you go, oh, the Jabbok River flows east to west out of the mountain range. Crossing it, you would be heading south, and Jacob stays north while he puts everybody between himself and Esau. I don't know about this Jacob. Well, he wrestled with a man. Now, is the man an angel of God, or is he God himself? And frankly, there's no way to tell. But think what's happening here. This is the climactic night. Jacob has been deceiving everyone from before he was born. He and Esau are struggling in the womb. He and Esau are at each other as they're born. Jacob trying to pull Esau back in so he can get out first. Jacob deceives Esau and takes his birthright, takes his blessing. Jacob deceives his father Isaac. Isaac is blind. Jacob pulls one over on him. Jacob's name means the deceiver. And boy, he has deceived everyone. And when he goes to live with Uncle Laban, he goes to graduate school in deception. And now, all of that is coming due. The chickens are coming home to roost, finally. It's like a man with a whole wallet full of credit cards who runs them all up, runs up debt everywhere he can possibly get it, and at some point in time, the bills are coming due. And now he's gone to the mailbox, opened the mailbox, and here they all are. Everything is coming together in this story. Jacob is struggling with God. And when the man saw that he could not overpower him, he touched the socket of Jacob's hip so that his hip was wrenched as he wrestled with the man. And then the man said, "Let go, it's daybreak." Jacob said, "I will not let go unless you bless me." And the man asked him, "What is your name?" "Jacob," he answered. And the man said, "Your name will no longer be Jacob, but Israel." A person's name does much more than denote the individual. A person's name encapsulates the very character of a person, the very substance of a person. And Jacob's name is changed to Israel. Jacob the deceiver becomes Israel, which means he who struggles with God. Jacob is going to begin a struggle with God. Now, he is not instantly transformed, that's for sure. He's going to go on deceiving people for quite a while. But gradually, and we see in the story, as the story unfolds, he'll still be called Jacob, but very gradually, the name Israel will begin replacing Jacob. It's a suggestion that Jacob's character is changing over time, but it's going to take a while. Jacob said, "Please tell me your name," in verse 29. But then he replied, "Why do you ask my name?" And he blessed him there. So Jacob called the place Peniel, saying, "It is because I saw God face to face, and yet my life was spared." I saw God face to face in the person of a man, an angel, something else. Is he literally wrestling with someone? Or is he sound asleep in the midst of a nightmare, tossing and turning and struggling? Well, that's left to our imagination. But it is a pivotal moment in Jacob's life. Finally, the sun rose, verse 31, as he passed Peniel. He was limping because of his hip. And then, chapter 33, Jacob looked up, and there was Esau coming with his 400 armed men. Can things get any worse? He's encountered Laban. They've agreed to part and keep an eye on each other. He's encountered God and struggled with God. And now you finally think the struggle is over. He's limping along. He looks up, and there is Esau in the distance with 400 armed men coming toward him. Oh, what are we going to do now? He divided the children among Leah, Rachel, and two maidservants. He put the maidservants and their children in front. Notice, not the two wives, but the maidservants, Bilhah and Zilpah, and their children. They're the most dispensable. Then Leah and her children, they're second most dispensable. Then Rachel and Joseph in the rear. He himself went on ahead and bowed to the ground seven times as he approached his brother. Can you picture the scene? Here they are on the king's highway, Esau heading north, Jacob heading south, and they are going to meet. There's nowhere to run. And Jacob, all the gifts have already gone, and now old Jacob, limping along, sees his brother, hits the deck, bows down to him seven times. But Esau, who had every intention of killing Jacob, Esau, sitting on a big black stallion with 400 armed men, has encountered the herds and flocks wave after wave. Now Jacob bowing down and the wives and the children and everyone behind. And Esau, he's got to laugh. This is comical. Esau ran to meet Jacob and embraced him. Esau got off that horse. You can see him shaking his head. Just like that little twerp. And he ran to Jacob, threw his arms around his neck and kissed him, and they wept. Esau, tears of laughter. Jacob, tears of relief. Then Esau looked up and saw the women and children. He said, "Who are these people with you?" And Jacob answered, get the tone of voice, "They are the children God has graciously given your servant." Then the maidservants and their children approached and bowed down. Next, Leah and her children came and bowed down. Last of all came Joseph and Rachel, and they too bowed down. Esau asked, "What did you mean by all the droves that I encountered before I got here?" "Oh, to find favor in your eyes, my lord," he said. But Esau said, "Look, I have plenty already, my brother. Keep what you have for yourself." "Oh, no, 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 please," said Jacob. "If I have found favor in your eyes, accept this gift for me. For to see your face is like seeing the face of God." Oh, he's pouring it on. "Now that you've received me favorably, oh, please accept the present that was brought to you. For God has been gracious to me, and I have all I need. And oh, please take the gift." And because Jacob insisted, Esau said, "All right, all right." And then Esau said, "Look, let's be on our way. I'll accompany you. I'd like to invite you back home to my place. You haven't seen it. It's been 20 years. We haven't seen each other. And we'll have a big banquet. You know, just like in the story of the prodigal son, we'll have a great banquet and a good time." And Jacob said, oh, my lord, I could not do that. I have women and children, and I would just slow you down. And, no, you go ahead, and we'll catch up with you. Just write down the address. I've got my GPS with me, and we'll be right there. No, you go ahead." Well, Esau said, no, we'll help. No, go ahead. Well, Esau goes ahead, and Jacob cuts off right at Rabbah and heads west into the eastern mountain range. He never goes to see Esau. This little twerp is still deceiving his brother after all this. He never meets him. Picture Esau going back home, and they've reconciled. My brother is back. And he prepares a big feast. He gets the house all ready to put up the women and the children and the animals. And they wait, and they wait, and they wait. And Jacob never shows. Hasn't changed at all. Well,
In chapter 35, Jacob finally returns back to Bethel, and there he settles in. And we read of the sons who were born to Jacob, and what about Esau's descendants? Over in chapter 36, we have a whole list of his descendants, as Jacob is the father of the 12 sons who become the founders of the 12 tribes of Israel. Esau is the founder of the Edomite people. And in chapter 36, we have their story as well. We lift up Esau, put him off to the side, and now focus on Jacob and his story. We move right in to the Jacob and Joseph story in chapter 37.
Well, this has been part 6 of our 1-year Bible study. It's really fascinating. Some of the stuff he brings out in here, like the camels, like if they're on empty, 25 gallons of water. Wow. Blog Talk Mom?
Like yes,
filling up a car.
Yes, I had heard that talk through the years, and it was just fascinating that she could do that. I mean, are there going to be that much water available right there? Because we've had wells before, and they don't just, you know, there's sort of a method to doing that. But that there are so many facts that he brings out that are well worth us considering. And this has been, I want to thank you, Sister Starla and Wild Bill, for putting this together. I know it's a lot of work, and I always say that, but I appreciate that. It's a very beneficial to me. I look forward to this. And I've studied the Bible probably 50 years, and I always come out with something that's like another piece of the puzzle when I listen to this teacher. I have sometimes... It's sort of, I guess, amusing, but I get contrary with him in my thinking. You know, I'm not following quite the same visual that he's portraying, but when he brings it all together, he does an excellent job. I also probably didn't see them quite as negative as he obviously part, and they were. They were very negative towards each other, very deceptive. A lot of hatred. But I think, too, I'll just put it this way. When he got to the part where Jacob's name was changed to Israel, and he went and he had wrestled with a theophany, which is many times like the burning bush with Moses, God reveals himself in certain ways. When he began to tell that, I recall how at a particular time in my life that I really did not have any faith that I could be any different. I was so just browbeaten by, you know, the enemy is the accuser. He comes to steal, kill, and destroy. And there was a particular service, I believe it was in the Assembly of God, and the Lord that was preaching on this particular thing, and I studied it, and God revealed to me that he did have something for me that only he could do. Only he could do it. He would change me. I would be changed, and no matter what, I wouldn't be perfect, but I would be changed. And I thank God. I thank the Creator of the world. And all through all of this deception and everything, I see the love of God staying with Abraham, staying with Sarah, through all of the things they did. By the way, I do not believe at all through Rabbi's story about Abraham's tears being what caused Isaac to be blind. That's absurd, and there's literally no scripture to go along with that. Rabbis, Jewish, they, you have the Torah and then you have the Talmud. The Torah is absolutely the first 5 books. That's God's word. The Talmud is so mixed up with man's ideas and theologies and words that I don't have any, and this must have come from that. So I will not take all the time, but I know that while Bill, I do before we get into it, you know, we're talking about the tears and just different things. And last week, Sister Starling, you were talking about the way that children are going to be born. They hadn't had any children. And Sarah laughs and Abraham laughs, but they're treated differently by the Lord. So do you want to tell us why?
Oh, you go right ahead. Go ahead. You explain things way better than I do. So go ahead.
It was so adorable, Sister Stala, because I knew it, you know, but then I thought, well, hey, you know, so I have Bibles, several Bibles, commentaries, whatever. And as I looked at it, when God revealed to Abraham the blessings that were going to come, he laughed, but he laughed like if I told you you just won the lottery, whoa, you know, you'd be laughing. But Sarah laughed like, yeah, yeah. You know, she had a disdain in her laughter. And there's a big difference in how we respond to God when he tells us, blesses us, gives us his word. He wants us to believe it, because if we, all the way through the theme of God reaching to his creation is for us to believe. By the grace of God, we can have faith to believe what he says. I mean, if he can take something that we heard in this last hour as confused and everybody working against everybody and bring out Abraham, and I just think it's beautiful how he brings out the relationship, but then we see God moving through every one of them, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And I love the Jacob's name was changed to Israel, and he had 12 sons, Reuben, Levi, Gad, Judah, and Simeon. And I used to teach that with the children, as they could realize there's 12 tribes. And it wasn't an accident. It was the mighty power of Almighty God that brought it all together so that there would be a day that the Messiah would be born, the one that would bring the fulfillment of the covenant. And I'm getting on into something he'll probably do next week. So, but I do appreciate you, Sister Charlotte, for bringing it out about the laughter. That was well worth looking into. So I will hush and let Bob Bill come in.
I appreciate your explanation. Appreciate your explanation in that. That was you explained things so well.
I wouldn't have even caught it if it hadn't been for your wisdom.
Well,
you're the smart.
You know, when you read things, God, you know, God will show us things that we haven't seen before, like you said, and I hadn't seen
that
before.
And isn't it? That was wonderful, and I love the way that I love to be around and we're in the company of people that want to look at God's Word that way, to delve into it and enjoy it and spark interest, you know, between, not debate, you know, not all that kind
yes.
of thing, but just join yes. it together. So thank you very, very much.
I'm not certain while Bill will get to be with us. He he got to work late this morning, so it'll put him later tonight. So I'm not certain he's listening, but I don't know if he'll get to speak with us.
One of the things that I didn't realize, I knew Laban had been very deceptive with Jacob. I didn't really, I wrote notes down as he was speaking that he was really turned that way. And it's interesting that we can see all of our personalities in flowing through these different people. You know, we have to deal with being selfish. We have to deal with deception and people to us and us to them. And I wish I could think of where the scriptures found is, what is man? What is man that the Lord would even be mindful of us? Because starting in the garden, it was just deception. And as you think of how tangled it up, sometimes, or there has been a time in a lesson that I taught, I think I showed a picture of it, didn't actually have it, but it was yarn that was just all matted up, you know, just a terrible mess. And you got to find that one string that you pull on, or you cannot unravel it. And so when in all of life, with everything we face, there's that one string, that one covenant, that one flow, and it's the love of God. For God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son, that whosoever would believe in him would not, should not. And this is another thing in the translation. Believe is not like beliefism, like in my head. It means trusting in, clinging to, and relying upon him. Because he didn't come to condemn us. He came to set us free. And this lesson today, it seemed like portrayed that kind of confusion as much as anything I've ever, you know, any lesson that I've ever heard. Because usually we sort of stop and begin to preach at one particular point, you know, without bringing in the whole, I didn't even realize that I knew that Jacob wasn't going to go with Esau, but that he knew he wasn't. You know, he was not going to go that direction. But I do believe that all the way through in Jacob, even though he was the deceiver, I believe he did have a desire for the birthright. He did have a desire to have that connection with God. I don't believe Esau ever did. It said he sought a place carefully with tears, mm-hmm. but he never found it. And I think that is the major difference between those two, is there was a desire, God, and I see that in humanity today. You may be the biggest mess in the world, but if you have that desire, if you reach out for him, he'll always be there. And I've seen today a young man, I guess he's 30, around 40 years old, and he had been on drugs so badly that he had actually lived in a tent down by some water around here, some river. And he's converted. He came to church. He's prayed through. And today he went with me to visit sick people, and we're trying to help people that are just horrible situations, get them food. And sometimes, you know, there's organizations that will help people, but you have to go through the steps to do that. Well, usually people want to eat every day, you know, and little children and things like that. And he went with me and helped me deliver things, lift things so that were too heavy for me. And it's just beautiful to see how God is transforming a man that was as far away from God, I guess, as I've ever seen. And he went around in the nursing home. I wanted someone like a man to greet when it's a man, and he was so humble. It was just beautiful. So it's not that he's got any great abilities or whatever. He just hungers and wants God, and God's given him fulfilling that in his life. So, did you have any callers or anything? I'll pause.
Well, while Bill he says he never noticed that Jacob still deceived his brother and did not go to his brother's party. Probably knew about some of the family parties that we'd had in the past. Great misunderstandings can come of too much time together. He said, also interesting, if there not being conversation recording between Abraham and Ishmael after going up to the mountain together. Ishmael. Isaac.
Isaac. Yeah, the, I thought that
when
was
he means.
Yeah, go ahead.
He said, once again, God shows he is faithful when his creation is not faithful.
And there's no way to record everything about everything, but I do believe God put the things in there that would show us the flow of humanity and God's covenant, you know, how it works through. I was pulling away from the speaker several times when he did sort of imply certain things that I thought one time he said that they gave her a nose ring. Was it?
Yeah.
And I looked at it. No, it was an earring. It certainly wasn't a nose ring. I don't know if he was trying to be funny. They didn't wear.
Yeah.
Jewish,
I think,
you know,
he does interject his own humor in some of this. And he doesn't mean it literally, I think.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And I, that's sort of good because it does make you think, really? You know, but I don't, sometimes I sort of have to wish he didn't do it, you know. So I know the experience with, go ahead.
Well, these are kids that he's talking to, you know, college kids. So he probably does that to, you know, for effect. He's just
and
trying to
works.
Be funny, you know.
Yeah. And if he gets, I'm sure that if he moved away from that in the setting he's in, they would miss the geography, the other things that he's wanting them to know for. That's what he's there for. He's he's a teacher to teach that in that way. And so that I remind myself of that each time, and I step back. And
and every time he does that, I think of you.
You do?
You know, I do. I know, I don't know. I guess I know you well enough to know what is going to be offensive, and I don't know. But you're not going to enjoy that part.
Yeah, it's not as much as offensive as when, well, maybe it is. I don't want to, because when it, like Jacob's Ladder, he was bringing out, what do we call it, Jacob's Ladder, he was bringing out the fact that his nature was not changed. He was still the deceiver. But I do believe that God gave him a tremendous revelation of himself at that point. And every step that Jacob went, he was hurt also. He was like with Laban. They lied. He worked. It was all of that. He was misunderstood. It was just, you know, it wasn't a happy time. I don't quite see him with a criminal nature just as much as I see him with a fallen nature. And maybe I just, all through the years as I've studied, I've learned to love them and to see myself and how pitifully I would have done if the situation had been up to me. I wouldn't have made it past the first couple of things, I don't think. And I don't, the thing about Jacob, I feel like he was not a prissy sissy kind of guy. I believe he was not the gruff, rough guy that Esau was, but I don't believe that in any way he was.
Yeah.
You know, he liked obviously to cook, and he liked that type of thing, and probably very artistic, and I can see how his father would definitely lean towards the hunter, and the mother the other. So. They are, and you see that in every family. So we're not all that different in this generation, even though we want to say, you know, look how far we've gone away, and actually sort of made a circle. And we're all doing the same human nature type things. But I was certainly transformed in my life on that change that took place in Jacob's life. I love that. I never did finish the 12 tribes, did it? Everybody, what I'm doing right now in church, people usually don't know the Ten Commandments. They don't know the 12 disciples' names. They don't know the 12 tribes of Israel. They don't know the Beatitudes. I mean, no one. If you just, and so I'm trying to work up some very simple lessons to, so that we can learn them. You know, we fight because they're not everywhere we want to be able to read them in courtrooms, but we don't know them ourselves. And it's really not that difficult, but it's just a matter. And I'm not really that good at memorizing. It's a good feeling to be, to know these things, like the teacher, you know, bringing out these different facts, how many there actually were, where they were in position. And that, I mean, they weren't, that was a lot. Like you brought out before, 250 gallons? Wow. That is a lot of water.
A lot of water.
Yeah. I'd like to know how it was set up. I really, that's another point he brought was really good about them going out. There was a well that sort of probably at every city or every little village or whatever, there was a well. And that's where I guess it would be what he brought out about the Samaritan lady. He just brings out many, many details. While Bill had already suggested that I write things down because he moved through so much. So I do. I have my notes and the different verses, and I followed along in the Bible too. And he's really, really good. And I look forward to more and more what he says.
Well, it's been really enlightening and very good. While Bill says we're all in process, none of us we're perfect. Even after finding God, we're still striving for the mark. And the difference of how Laban treated the servant of Abraham and Jacob was interesting.
He really brought out that Laban was money hungry and, you know, looking at it that way. But surely he had a few, you know, he did make an agreement with him and said he kissed his children and his grandchildren, and that must not have been easy for him either.
Yeah.
Well, I didn't realize he was that deceptive. But, you know, have you noticed in life the easiest way to really see yourself is if God put somebody, you know, like a mirror, and you see
uh-huh.
your actions in that person, and you think, ugh, maybe I need to go to the Lord with this one.
Yeah.
And I have, I seem like the quickest way I can be chastened by the Lord is to judge somebody. And, you know, the Lord, it's an absolute sin. It's warned, absolutely do not. We have no right. But yet I have. And when I do, I will be chastened. And I will usually do whatever I judge them and a little bit worse. Well, maybe I need to think that way.
Doesn't God
have
a sense
of
humor?
Oh, yes. For sure. No problem. Okay. He is telling me that the show is over. Did you receive that message?
I did.
So we will see you next week. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you, Blog Talk Mom. I do love and appreciate you so much. And thank you for helping us out and all you add to the show and Wild Bill. We want to thank everybody for listening this week, and we'll see you back here next week at your place. Good night.